on even whiter. You know it was Andy. Deep down, you know. Same as you knew about your father. He doesn't speak, and I can see I'm right. Ellen turns to him, and she's starting to shake. Somewhere inside, she's known too, but instead, she says, Dad didn't do anything wrong. His whole life was ruined for nothing. Nolan's still silent. Tell her, Ellen exhorts him. Finally, he says, I can't. This is bullshit, Ellen explodes. Katrina's a liar. She was jealous of our family. You know that as well as I do. We lost a lifetime with our father, with both our parents, because of her. I know that you believed it a long time, Nolan says quietly. I did too. I've wanted to, but since everything started with Katrina moving here, and since things have gotten so out of hand, I've started reading the court transcripts. I read Katrina's testimony, and the other girls too, and they're almost identical. That's because they were prepped by the DA. They were coached to lie. I don't think so. Look at her and listen to her. You know it's true. My eyes meet Ellen's. She can't resist knowing anymore. She sags against her brother. I see something I'm very familiar with. Shame. I'm sorry, she whispers. Tears are flowing down my cheeks. I feel like I've finally shed this awful weight I've carried for so long. I know now that Layton was the dirty one, not me. This is bullshit, Andy snaps. Family is family, and Kat is no one to you. You put family above everything, no matter what. No one speaks for a long minute. Then I say, You did it, Andy. You poisoned Sadie. Was it because you were putting family above everything, or because you wanted my husband for yourself? Andy turns to Wyatt. She's clearly unstable. I hope you're not actually believing any of this. No, Ellen says. That wasn't for family at all. That was all for herself. I don't know what you're talking about, Andy says. You met Doug before he and Katrina moved in, Ellen says. Doug came out a few weeks before to measure inside the house. Andy offered to help. They were inside for a few hours, at least. When you came outside with Doug that day after all the measuring, the two of you were laughing like old friends. You gave him a big hug before he got into his car. You told me how good it would be to have him in the neighborhood. You said, he's the kind of guy who could make me rethink my closed marriage. That was a joke, Andy protests. Nolan is staring at Andy, and even though he's known for a while, he couldn't avoid knowing when he saw them in the hospital room. The devastation looks fresh. Ellen is piecing things together, connecting the dots for him. The vasectomy, she says. So you wouldn't reproduce the latent genes. That wasn't really your idea, was it? It was Andy's. He's too anguished to answer. She was always leaving an escape hatch. Ellen spits out her next words at Andy. How long has it been going on, Andy? You and Doug. Nolan can't even look at Andy as he says, You're the one who came up with the ketamine. You talked about how Ellen needed an insurance policy when it came to getting Kat to move. You said the threatening letters weren't enough. You did what you always do. You made me think it was my idea, but it was what you wanted all along. You're all crazy. It must be contagious. Andy tries to laugh. You want Doug, but he's mine, I say, and I'm going to fight for him. Like you can win. Now Andy is laughing, but it's ugly and harsh. Has she forgotten her own husband is standing there? But she hasn't won yet, or she wouldn't be so insecure. Doug told me he doesn't have feelings for you, I say. I want to inflame her, get her to show her colors all the more. I need Nolan and Ellen to turn on her for good, to turn her into the police, because I know that she's behind the poisoning. Nolan and Ellen are done terrorizing me, but Andy still needs to be stopped. He's lying! You're nothing! Just a fucking victim! She sneers at me, infusing the word victim with loathing. He's been using you, I say, hoping it's true. You're a placeholder. He loves me, and you know it. It's a direct hit. She flies at me, knocking me against the brick wall. I'm so startled that it takes a second to react, and by then, I'm down on the ground. She's smacking my head against the concrete, and someone's trying to pull her off, but she's curiously strong. Feral. I hear a loud, authoritative voice. Freeze! Get off her now! It's Wyatt, bellowing, and I look up to see a gun trained on Andy. Andy listens, standing up and stepping away. I'm dazed from the shock of the attack and from the blow to the head. Ellen squats down next to me. Are you okay? She asks. Wyatt is looking down, waiting for my answer. And maybe that's why Nolan grabs the gun away from him so easily. Hey, Nolan! Hey, man! Wyatt says. You don't want to do this! Nolan gestures for him to get back, and Wyatt complies. So you did sleep with Doug, Nolan says. Even though you spent all last night convincing me that I was wrong about what I saw in the hospital room. And it almost worked. I came so close to believing you. We haven't slept together, Andy says. He has feelings for me, yes, but that's because I wanted him to. I wanted that insurance policy we talked about. If he fell in love with me, if his marriage ended, then he and Kat would move away. See? It was for the family. Nolan continues as if she hasn't spoken. You talked about killing Kat. In that last email you sent her. Stabbing her in the heart. You know I wasn't serious about that, Andy says. I was trying to help you. You and June. That's what this has all been about. You made that comment one time. Nolan is seeing Andy as if for the first time. You said that if something happened to Kat, you would hate for Ellen to take the fall. But she would be the most likely suspect. The one with the grudge. Who'd written all those notes. He levels the gun. Katrina wasn't getting out of the picture fast enough. Doug hadn't chosen you. You were going to murder her and frame my sister.
No, no!
She waves her hands frantically. I would never do that! You poisoned someone. Maybe it was meant for Kat. Maybe it was meant for Sadie. But I don't want to know what else you're capable of. Andy is talking to Ellen now, probably calculating that it'd bring Nolan back to his senses.
Ellen, you know me. I love your brother. Tell him.
She's not worth it, Ellen says to Nolan. Give the gun back to Wyatt.
I'm Fisher's mother, Andy says. He needs me.
You're not Fisher's mother anymore, Nolan says. You're a monster. And I've known monsters before. He shoots, and Andy crumples. It really is like slow motion, like a movie, and the sound is still ringing in my ears. And I don't know who goes to whom, but my arms are around Ellen, and hers are around me. Nolan is doubled over on the ground. It's like he's the one who's been shot. Wyatt, meanwhile, is springing into action.
Call 911, he tells me. And remember this, all of you. She was reaching for the gun. Andy reached for the gun, and with all that we'd just learned about her, Nolan had no choice.
It was self-defense, Ellen says, robotic with shock.
Exactly.
Wyatt is pure kinetic energy. I think of all those stories you hear about the thin blue line.
The way the officers pull together. How they plant guns in the hands of people they've shot.
Call 911, he says. Now.
I take out my phone, which has been recording since we came out here. I didn't get a confession, exactly. I don't know why Andy did what she did. But I told the truth. And I got more than I could have hoped for. Acknowledgement. Vindication. Ellen's arms around me. Ellen and Nolan don't need to be punished by the law. They've suffered plenty. In different ways than I have, but still. I look over at Andy. Is she breathing? Do I want her to be? Maybe justice has been achieved after all. Chapter 37. Doug is on the love seat. The room is dark, except for one dim lamp. He's slumped, wrapped in blankets, a portrait in misery. I've never seen him look like that. Is it because he knows? Word spreads fast in the AV about the most minor things. It's hard to imagine it hasn't spread about something as big as this.
It's after 2 a.m., he says hoarsely. We need to talk. I've been waiting up for hours. Where have you been?
There's no anger in it, only fear. So word hasn't spread to Doug. He's that out of the loop. Just girls' night, I say. You know how those nights can go.
Kat, I have to ask. Were you with Wyatt tonight?
No.
But I know you've been with him before.
I was dosed with ketamine, Doug. Just like I told you. You may not believe me about that or anything else, but I'm not crazy. This neighborhood is.
I'm sorry I didn't believe you.
I stare at him. Why the change of heart? He sighs.
Let's just put it all out on the table. I've been spending time with Andy. As friends, but tonight, after you left, she came over to tell me she loves me and that she wants us to be together. She just wants to wait until after her 10th wedding anniversary to Nolan so she can get his money. What kind of person is that?
He looks amazed, and he doesn't even know all that came to light earlier. That's the least of her crimes.
I told her she was crazy and that I love you.
No wonder it was so easy for me to push Andy over the edge. Doug had just rejected her. He'd chosen a nothing like me over her. So what I told her actually turned out to be true.
You're saying you aren't sleeping with her? You've never slept with her?
No. I swear to you. But I know I made a mistake spending time with her at all, when I should have been on your side and by your side. She was in my ear this whole time. She showed me your phone and said that you'd been with Wyatt. I should have confronted you then, but I was just so hurt and angry, too. Maybe I wanted you to see me hanging out with Andy. I wanted you to see that someone else was interested in me, since you haven't been lately. I almost laugh. So it was true. He really was using Andy. I flirted with her, which I know was wrong. But I felt like I needed the escape. From us and from Sadie being sick. That day I went into work. I couldn't focus, and she texted me. I told her how bad I was feeling, and she said we could take a drive together. We went to Point Reyes and ate some oysters, but that was it. Still, it was enough. I lied to you. I was weak, and I was running away.
You didn't sleep with her, but do you have feelings for her?
I didn't even like her much, once I got to know her. She's so full of herself.
Not anymore, she's not.
I love you. I love our family. I just didn't know where your head was and how you could kiss Wyatt. Andy made it sound like you'd done a lot more than that. Then she told me about the openness, and she said you were supposed to tell me about it, and you didn't. So I felt like you were keeping it all to yourself. You know, like you didn't want me to be with other people, but you were doing it behind my back, with my new friend. I can understand his point, but after the night I've had, I don't know what to think or feel. You've been through so much in your life, Kat, and you always deserved better than me. I'm just this spoiled kid, and the first time things didn't go my way, I started spending time with another woman. So much that he doesn't know about, but he needs to. Are you still seeing Wyatt? He asks. I was never seeing him. I kissed him once because Andy tried to frame me. I'm not interested in Wyatt or anyone else. I should have talked to you about everything. Is it too late for us? Can you forgive me? He asks. Layton was a monster. Doug's my husband, a flawed person who loves me. And I still love him. Andy's a monster, too. Well, she was. It's not too late, I say. His eyes fill with tears. But I have to tell you something. The reason that I know Sadie's safe is because the person who poisoned her is dead. His eyes widen. That person is Andy. He visibly startles.
Is that a joke?
No. She was shot tonight. I'd learned of her death from the police as they were questioning me. It took a long time for the police to take everyone's statements, including Wyatt's, which was the one that gave all the others credibility. The officers obviously had a great deal of respect for him. Enough to sweep any discrepancies under the rug? I have to hope so. Escalation of force, Wyatt said grimly. Nolan had no choice but to shoot her when she tried to grab the gun. The rest of us told that same story. Nolan hasn't been arrested. Not yet, anyway. He was by Andy's side when she died. I can't even imagine what he was feeling. All I know is it's over. For all of us. Despite all Andy's done and how Doug told me he didn't even like her, there he is, looking shattered. I feel myself shattering, too. He shouldn't look like that. Then he says,
What can I do? I'll tell the police whatever you want.
It dawns on me. He thinks I killed Andy. That's why he looks like that. He's not thinking of her. He's thinking of me. He looks shattered because he thinks I might be guilty of murder, and he's offering to tell whatever lie will protect me. I didn't kill her. Nolan did. He exhales, his relief palpable in the room.
But why would Nolan... Because of...
No, it's not because he thinks you slept with Andy. There's so much I need to tell him, including who Ellen is, who Layton is, who I am. I can't keep secrets anymore, for my own sanity. I want to live clean for Sadie and for me. I'm too exhausted to think, but I know this. We need to get out of this house that we never should have bought. Not only because of Ellen, but because we can't afford it. We should never have taken something we didn't earn, especially when it came with so many strings attached. The AV is Ellen's, and she can have it back. We need to get out of this house, I say. Have your parents buy you out, and then we'll move into an apartment somewhere. We'll do our best to get past what's happened, and then we'll buy a house within our means. Silence.
You're right, he finally says. We can't stay here.
I've been stupid, and I've been cruel, and I've tried to keep up with the Joneses, and in the process, I've hurt you and shattered your trust. But I promise you, we'll get it back.
I reach out my hand. Let's go to bed, I say. In the morning, I'll tell him everything, because he needs to know if we're going to get the trust back. Because he deserves to know, as my husband. But most of all, because I deserve to be able to tell, without shame. I didn't do anything wrong. And now Ellen knows it too. And that makes all the difference. Chapter 38. Moving out of the AV is pretty different from moving in. There's no block party this time. The neighbors come by, two by two, like on Noah's Ark. Raquel and Bart, Gina and Oliver, Tennyson and Vic. They tell me they understand and they hope we'll stay in touch. I don't know what it is they could possibly understand, but I hug them back anyway. Brandon has a big bag of clothes and toys for me, and he asks if he can bring the next batch to wherever I'm living. I tell him, absolutely. I'm touched that Yolanda and Wyatt show up, and while there are no hugs from either of them, I appreciate that they wish me well.
I'm glad Wyatt got to be a hero,
Yolanda allows. They can spin it however they want. All I know is, I'm walking out of this neighborhood a free woman, an accessory to nothing. I have no hard feelings, really, toward any of them. They're just regular people, struggling through. And they want a community that will make it easier. They want something egalitarian and democratic. Their aspirations are noble. The AV is no throwback to a kinder, gentler time like I first thought. It's incestuous and it's fraught, but they're all genuinely trying for their own strange kind of utopia. Trans-urban, indeed. They want to know each other's secrets, sure, but they also truly want to know each other. There's love between these people. Ties that bind and gag, sometimes literally. It's complicated, like family. I think they love June, though I don't know how many of them know about Ellen. It was never too good to be true. It was always exactly good enough and bad enough to be true. Doug's starting therapy, too. In a strange way, it's nice to realize I'm not the only one with issues. For Doug and me, openness was never going to work. I'd kept so much of my past from him that we couldn't start from a place of transparency, which seems to be the prerequisite. Plus, I have so many issues I still need to figure out that there was no way I could give Doug, or myself, permission to be with anyone else. The real surprise is that Doug is finally admitting he has issues too. Now, whether they can be fixed, or whether they'll fit together with mine, that's an open question. But the fact that we're about to wrestle with it makes me hopeful. Neighbors with benefits is not the reason my marriage is in tumult. I don't think it would have mattered if we'd opted in or opted out. It would have all come to light eventually. It seems like openness is just amplification. If you were happy, you're happier. If you were unhappy, you're unhappier. It doesn't save you or destroy you. You do that yourselves. Cracks in the foundation will eventually be exposed, and openness is no quick fix. Relationships are work, however you play them. The AV proves that generally, people are not good or bad. They're simply warring with their own impulses, good and bad. I just need to surround myself with people who win that battle most of the time. And I have to engage in that fight myself so that I can embody not just the mother I want to be, but the person, kind and loving and open, when it's warranted. My neighborhood will be a reflection of me and vice versa. Someday, I'm going to tell Sadie about my past.
It'll be an expurgated version, but enough for her to get the gist. I need her to learn that her body is her own, and that any sex she has needs to be sex she truly wants. When it isn't, she needs to be able to speak up and say that. I want her to discover her body herself first, in her own time, and make sure anyone who enters it is worthy. She'll be the girl and the woman I never was, but still hope to be. The truck is loaded up, and Doug is chatting with the movers. Ellen is the last to show up. I hoped I'd see her. She wrote a letter and slid it under my door a week ago, expressing, in great detail, her remorse and regret about not believing me all those years ago. It was a relief to see her handwriting on something other than a piece of cardboard. She also told me more about what she's gone through all these years and why her denial was so powerful. She just wasn't ready to lose her family or even the idea of her family. She was too scared to stop being angry, scared of what she'd feel and what she'd do. "Can I apologize again?" she says, "in person." "You don't need to. You were driven mad trying to protect your family. The wrong family. It was the only one you knew for a long time." She nods with a small smile. "I can't believe how forgiving you are. I don't know that I could do it." None of us is innocent. Sadie is in my arms, and she reaches out for Ellen. Well, almost none of us. Ellen smiles at Sadie. "Such a beautiful girl. I hope she grows up safe and happy." "I'm going to do my best." I tear my eyes from Sadie. "How's Nolan?" "He's a mess. He's actually been in a psychiatric hospital. I've had Fisher with me ever since, well, you know. He's inside with Hope now. She's actually really good with him." "I can believe that. It's good to see this side of her. But it's terrible how it came about." She looks right at me. "Thank you for protecting Nolan. You didn't owe him that. What you told the police, I mean, they're not going to charge him." "Charging him wouldn't help anyone." Ellen averts her eyes back to Sadie. "I'm still in shock. I can't believe how out of control everything got. How far I was willing to go." "You thought I was the enemy. That's what your dad wanted you to think." She takes a deep breath and finally looks at me. "So, where do we go from here?" "I have no idea. But I feel like something inside me has been exercised, if that makes sense." "I feel that way too." She looks toward the now empty house. Then we turn to each other with uncertain smiles. There's nothing and everything left to say. So much that no one else could ever understand. A bond deeper than perhaps any other I could ever make. Forged in the trauma of misplaced loyalty. Stronger than steel. Layton tried to pull us apart, but it didn't work. Somehow, we found our way back together. Love is like that. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Neighborly by Ellie Monago, performed by Christina Panfilio and Amy McFadden, directed by Jonathan Pennock. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.